The Italian Wine Podcast is the community-driven platform for Italian wine geeks around the world. Support the show by donating at italianwinepodcast.com. Donate 5 or more euros and we'll send you a copy of our latest book, My Italian Grape Geek Journal, absolutely free. To get your free copy of My Italian Grape Geek Journal, click support us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. Grazie mille. Welcome to the Italian Grape Geek Podcast. Join us as we explore personal stories of travel and tasting with Italy's must-know grape varietals. Chart your own course with My Italian Grape Geek Journal, your personal tasting companion to accompany the series. Available now on Amazon. With thanks to Colangelo and Partners for their generous support with this project.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I am Julie Farraker, also known in Italy by Julia. I am a Vin Italy International Academy Italian Wine Ambassador and Certified Educator. And besides that, I'm also the co-owner of the Italian Cellar. It is an online Italian wine shop. We also have a location in Virginia, and we specialize in Italian wines. So 100% Italian wine and, of course, olive oil. And while I am not talking about Italian wine or Italy, I am also a high school English and social studies teacher, so I'm about to end my 20th year teaching America's youth. But my introduction to Italy is because when I think about why I have such passion for Italy and its wines, its olive oils, basically any product that comes from Italy, it is thanks to my mother and my grandmother from the island of Ischia, or if we were in Naples, they'd be calling it Ischia. And then, of course, my grandfather came from the volcanic island of Stromboli. So for me, I grew up with Italian culture and traditions, and it's just something that I've been pursuing ever since I could get on a plane and travel. So I've been very fortunate to reach all 20 regions of Italy. And even though I feel that I've seen, you know, every corner of that beautiful country, there's still just so much more to see. So my future will hopefully be living in Italy. That's what I'm working towards. And in the meantime, I will be continuing to study wine and talking about Italy and its beautiful wines and grapes. So, well, thank you for joining me. And today I'm going to be talking about different grape groups. So you've probably heard some episodes that had to deal with individual grapes and their characteristics. But we need to remember that in Italy, with a country of 600 native grapes, we also have grape families. And when we talk about grape families, that means we'll have a shared name and then grapes that will fall under that umbrella. Something to keep in mind as a wine student, just because they will share a prefix or the main name, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're all A, related, and B, share the same wine profiles. Some that we'll be talking about be red grapes and white grapes within the same group family. So let's begin. Our first grape family is called Colorino, and Colorino is an obscure Italian black skin grape group variety from Tuscany. As the name suggests, its main use is as a blending ingredient to add color to wines. So think about it, Colorino, you're adding color to wines. As well as being deeply pigmented, Colorino's small berries have elevated tannin levels. During harvest time, they can easily be identified in the vineyards as the leaves turn dark red near maturation. Aromatically, the variety is somewhat muted. So very interesting to know, it's contributing color, but aromatically, it is not going to be enhancing wine. And when we think about the Colorino group, so this is where the family part comes in. We have the main members: Colorino del Valdarno, Colorino di Pisa, Colorino di Lucca, and Colorino Americano. Now, the main grape from this family that usually gets the most attention would be the Colorino del Valdarno because it shows the best winemaking potential. And I'll talk about that one specifically later. But if you notice, of the others that I mentioned, there was always some type of a preposition. So the preposition D, signifying geographic location. So I mentioned that this grape group was from Tuscany, and then that's why I had mentioned Colorino del Valdarno, Colorino di Pisa, and Colorino di Lucca. So Lucca and Pisa are very close to each other. However, something to always keep in mind as a wine student, you change your soil, you change your location, you basically change your grape. So this is why it's very important to make sure to study geographical location when talking about grape families. So during the 1990s, Corradino became very popular with producers for correcting the lighter-hued Sangiovese-based wines of Chianti and Vino Nobile di Montepulciano. More recently, however, improvements in winemaking techniques and better vineyard practices have resulted in Sangiovese fruit that is far superior to that produced in the past. Thus, Corradino isn't utilized as much. So its main objective was to help support the Chianti and Vino Nobile di Montepulciano wines that are Sangiovese based. However, just to recap, right now it's not utilized as much because Sangiovese has really upped its game. So I would say that many listeners most likely started their Italian wine journey with a Chianti style, Chianti type wine, and have encountered Corradino. You just probably didn't think about it. And although it's more commonly used as a blending component, Corradino is sometimes made as a varietal wine. That's not very common, but it does occur. And if you do want to try to find one, you would find it under the generic IGT Toscana designation. So just remember IGT, it's the broad Indicazione Geografica Tipica area of Tuscany. And you might find some producers that will have it. However, if you're looking to more of the wine profile itself, let's just focus on Corradino dal Vardano as the main one. So in the vineyard, this particular grape would be disease resistant and hardy, as well as later ripening. And unlike other Corradinos, its pulp is clear instead of colored, therefore producing colorless juice when pressed. That's something very interesting to highlight and remember. And in the glass, it will have a deep violet color. It is full-bodied and assertive in its structure. It smells and tastes of dark berries, black licorice, and blackberry jam with menthol and herbal notes. It's quite a lovely profile. As it is a late ripening variety, some wines may show a green streak due to a lack of ripeness in cool, rainy years. And if you do find it, it's still dry and, of course, a red wine. Your highest quality plantings are found in the Chianti Rufina zone and is added anywhere from 1 to 10% to Sangiovese wines to increase their color. So Chianti Rufina, so if you remember with Chianti and Chianti Classico, there are different zones. This would be where it would be most apparent. But if you're looking for other ways to find Corradino dal Vardano, we're going to be dealing with some of our DOP wines. So it's going to be blended in a Chianti Classico DOC G, Chianti DOC G, Vino Nobile di Montepulciano DOC G, as well as many other Tuscan-based wines. As it is a trademark of Tuscany, of course, many producers will still try to utilize it. It's just not as apparent anymore as it was in the past. So for pairings, if you do find one, I would say if it grows with it, it goes with it. That's how I try to always approach wine and food. So with Corradino being something of a Tuscan nature, I would try to stick with more Tuscan style dishes. So, you know, I was thinking about a bistecca fiorentina with rosmarino. And of course, even if you find some of the wonderful sandwiches in Firenze, I think that would go really well with it. So I would hope that on your Italian wine journey, you would be able to identify the importance of Corradino in the past of the Chianti style wines, but understanding that, you know, it's more of a supplementary grape as well as the other ones in this family. So they will share some characteristics, but really, if you're looking to try to identify one, Corradino dal Vardano is your key.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Don't forget to visit our YouTube channel, Mama Jumbo Shrimp, for fascinating videos covering Stevie Kim and her travels across Italy and beyond, meeting winemakers, eating local food, and taking in the scenery. Now back to the show.
And welcome back, bentornati. So we're going to continue to talk about different grape families. So we were just discussing Corradino, and now we're moving on to Greco. Now, if we're looking at our Italian dictionary, you're probably thinking Greco. Does that mean Greek? Well, yes, it does. But something to remember with this grape family is that it doesn't necessarily mean that any grape that has the Greco prefix would necessarily be from Greece. Now, anything to know about Southern Italy 101 is that it was originally settled by the Greeks, and much of the culture, much of even, you know, the type of wine, bringing wine and grapes to Southern Italy was from the Greeks. So there's a very strong component in Greek history. Even interesting enough is that if we think about DNA, even of Southern Italians, as I can attest to that, that many will share current DNA with many Greeks, especially from the island of Crete. So that's something to keep in mind, even thinking about our grapes. So historical records and archaeological findings suggest that the Greeks introduced this variety to Southern Italy during their colonization in 8th century BC, hence the name Greco. These ancient wine cuttings would have come from Thessaly, a region of Greece known for its viticulture. The Greeks recognized the potential of Campania's fertile soils and favorable climate, planting vines that would flourish and eventually evolve into the Greco grape we know today. So let's think about all of the different grapes that share the Greco name. So the Greco family set includes Greco, Greco Bianco, Greco Giallo, Greco Moro, Greco Bianco del Pollino, Greco Bianco di Ciro, Greco Bianco di Donici, Greco Bianco di Lamezia Terme, Greco Bianco di Rogliano, in addition to even a red wine grape, Greco Nero. Now, again, to go back to an Italian grammar lesson, just remember that the preposition di is of or from. So when we talked about Colorino and how there was a distinction between Colorino di Lucca or Colorino di Pisa for geographical location, some of the ones that I had just mentioned, it's the same thing. So when I said Greco Bianco di Lamezia Terme, again, focusing on geographical location versus Greco Bianco di Ciro. But just remember, your preposition of di or del, when it's combined, will show up very frequently when we're learning about Italian wines. However, this prefix also would show up in other spellings. So when you think of Grechetto and Greconico, but they're not related. So it's good to remember that Greco is basically a nod to the Greek past of Southern Italy. Again, as it was settled by the Greeks, I believe that their first stop was the island of Ischia. So from that standpoint, note the connection, but doesn't necessarily mean that these grapes will always be related and that they will always have a Greek background. But if we're thinking about the family as a whole, there are basically two main grapes in this family to focus on. So I don't want to use the term generalized Greco, but if you see Greco itself, that main grape is famously grown in the province of Avellino, historically known as Irpinia, located inland some 30 miles east of Napoli in the sea, and in and around the town of Tufo, named for its tufaceous soil. The grapes are exposed to a climate that enables them to retain acidity as they ripen. The rich volcanic soil gives the resulting wine its complexity and mineral quality. This area is also home to Falanghina, Aglianico, and Fiano, the powerhouse grapes of Campania. And if you think about it, just before we continue, you might have heard Greco di Tufo before. Just note that Greco is the grape, and then Greco di Tufo is the wine. Specifically noting again, pop quiz, preposition of D, location. So if it's the Greco that's grown in Tufo, in that area around Avellino, the producers will be making a Greco di Tufo, and it will have a certain profile thanks to the soils that are there. And if we're looking in the vineyard, this grape is late ripening, disease sensitive, and the site selection is of the utmost importance. And in the glass, the wines show great depth and structure. Greco-based wines will usually have a deep lemon hue, almost golden, as well as having a rich palate. And for our wine students, this is something important, a trademark oily mouthfeel. That's something to keep in mind during a blind tasting, as soon as you're feeling that oily mouthfeel and you're hitting the other boxes, you're probably in Greco di Tufo land. And as well, you'll find marked acidity and the higher alcohol level. And some of the aromas that you'll find, again, still trademarks of Greco, will have flowers, peaches, and honey. They are very well known as a young wine. However, they do have the potential of aging. And while you're also tasting it towards the end of your palate, it'll usually conclude with a clean and persistent finish. and it has a well-balanced acidity, and it will make sure that the rich flavors don't empower, and you'll have a really enjoyable fresh wine. And over time, this wine may develop additional flavors with notes of honey and toasted almond becoming more prominent in aged bottles. So some of you also might be wondering, aging white wines in Campania? Well, as much as it probably wasn't as popular in the past, when we think of some producers, a producer notably named Di Meo, so he has an Agricola in this area, and he also works with Fiano, he works with Aglianico as well. He has been known to be one of the benchmark producers for aging Campanian white wines. So Campania is a really important wine region for this case, because we're thinking about the Taurasi wine, of course, the red wine that hopefully you've encountered before, but also white wines as an aging factor. This is something to really look into and find some of these wines as well. So you're going to be looking for specifically Greco di Tufo Doc G. So that is a wine, the Denominazione Origine Controllata e Garantita. So we're looking for that specific one. And when you're looking for the Greco di Tufo wines, the styles, if you're in Tufo, the grapes will be grown on higher, steeper sites, and they can really show their elegance and mineral-focused elements there. But if we're looking at other parts of this Avellino area, Montefusco, for example, at a lower elevation, the wines will demonstrate more structure and weight. So really, site selection is important. As I had mentioned before, you change your soil, you change your location, you change your grape. So Greco really shines in the Tufo area. And if we're looking for other producers, so as I had mentioned before, Di Meo, he's really been doing well with aging white wines. Mastro Berardino is another name that's synonymous with white wines in Campania, San Paolo, Donna Chiara, and Benito Ferrara. So this wine in itself, we have to talk about food now if we're in Campania. It's a medium-bodied wine, and it will complement, of course, let's think about it, seafood. So shrimp scampi, clams, calamari, but they're very versatile. So because of her herbal and floral notes, they would be really great for even chicken or even some pesto. I've done that before. And usually pesto, of course, I want to stick with Liguria, but sometimes we need to think outside the box. And however, I would be remiss if I didn't stick to Campania dishes, because that is as my region. So pizza margherita, of course, and then seafood risotto. But we cannot mention Campania without mozzarella. So some fresh mozzarella, maybe even fried. But if we want to even think about how burrata is really becoming very popular, you won't really find it as much in Campania. That's more from the neighboring region of Puglia. However, burrata would also be a really pleasant complement to Greco di Tufo wines. And make sure to serve chilled. But besides Greco, in this sense, if we're looking for another style that could be sweeter, then we would be thinking about the Greco Bianco grape. So Greco as itself, that's going to be making the dry white wine. But Greco Bianco, so we're going to move a little bit south of Campania into Calabria. This one specifically will make a wine that is more of a honeyed, air-dried type of dessert wine. And you'll find that in the Greco di Bianco DOC. And it's usually sometimes attributed to also having some origins with Malvasia di Lipari, which produces another similar dessert style wine of Malvasia delle Lipari, the wine. But these are two really different wines from that Greco family. And I hope that you're able to enjoy them soon.
Listen to the Italian Wine Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya FM, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through italianwinepodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. Until next time, cin cin.